Hello, and welcome to the 32nd episode in our Crossing Thin Ice podcast series, brought to you by Actuarial Risk Management. My name is Max Rudolph, and as always, I'm joined by Dave Ingram. One way to think about scenarios is where are we going, and what are the things then that have to move in concert to get there? This sets up our assumptions for modeling of regime changes and is our focus today. Our format is different for this episode. So please let us know if you want more or less using this style. By the way, nothing in today's podcast is intended to be investment advice. We are here to provide educational material on ERM topics without getting lost in the weeds. We hope that you will also take advantage of our complimentary quarterly newsletter and webcast on a variety of risk management topics. Let's get started exploring the scenarios of regime change. One building block of these scenarios is a narrative scenario. It's a different way than a lot of us are used to thinking about scenarios, where normally we're used to saying interest rates go up, 1% a year for 5 years and then back down, and really looks at one scenario, one assumption at a time. But with a narrative scenario, you're trying to tell a story. And for those interested, you can go back to our very first podcast where we talked about narrative scenarios in more detail. But these here, it's looking at multiple assumptions that all move at the same time with interactions between them. So it's very similar to the complex adaptive systems that we talk about sometimes. Some examples would be if interest rates rise, so if you have floating rate bonds, they're going to get a higher rate, but you're also going to get higher defaults. So you'd want both those assumptions to move in concert. Climate change is just has a lot of these type of interactions. One example would be that higher temperatures melt the ice, driving sea levels higher and creating a feedback loop, because the sun is now absorbed by water, which is dark, instead of being reflected back into space. Dave, you want to tee up some examples that we've thought about?
Thanks, Max. Today we're going to focus on four examples of scenarios that we've read about. In fact, reading about these scenarios was a big part of triggering our interest in this topic in the first place. So the four examples we're going to talk about, first of all, the Fourth Turning, that's a pair of books, one that was written decades ago and the other one that was published just last year. Then we're going to talk about two scenarios from two different folks from very different backgrounds, Ray Dalio and Peter Zeihan. And then finally, we're going to finish up by looking at a scenario from the IPCC, which Max will remind us of what that stands for when we get there.
Yeah, and in the first one, the Fourth Turning, the new book is called The Fourth Turning Is Here. It's authored by Neil Howe. The other author, Strauss, has passed away from the earlier book. But Neil is a demographer. In their analysis, they look at cycles. So they look at 20 years per generation, and then 4 generations per century, or per about every 100 years. And the fourth turning of the four for each generation is the crisis generation. And the last three are World War II, the Civil War, and the Revolutionary War in the US. So it's not perfect, but it makes you think. Dave's comments on limited data points on this book and having listened to the speaker led him to think about survivor bias. But maybe one thing we can do before we go on is to highlight the six different categories that we're gonna look at with these scenarios, these different scenarios, and just at a high level. One is demographic shift. So under the fourth turning, that has low fertility rates and increasing longevity. The second one would be levels of debt. So in this case, it's high. Given and expecting conflict in this fourth turning. The climate effects is the third one, and here they essentially say we're likely to hold off on that is because we have other things on our plate, and then when we get back to rolling over into the first turning, that's when climate change would be addressed. So the fourth one is technology. There's higher order effects in war, finance, and privacy out there. Growth would be the fifth one, and it would be a challenge in the short term. And then once you get to the first turning, it would be smooth sailing. And then the sixth one that we're looking at is the rise of populism. Fourth turning views this as temporary and common at this point in the cycle, that it's something we saw back in the 1930s as well. So Dave, why don't you lead us through the Ray Dalio example?
Sure. So Ray Dalio is a very different background from Neil Howe, and he's an investment manager, the founder of a giant investment fund, Bridgewater Associates. The thing that he focuses the most on in looking at the future is debt. He sees the level of debt being high currently. Or he believes that we're in a part of a cycle. He thinks of debt as flowing through like a seven-stage cycle. Dalio expects there to be a 2 to 3 year long debt-driven bust or recession, and he sees there being three major forces that drive that. Besides debt, the second one is the low interest rates that we had been experiencing up until the last couple years, which is actually influences folks towards taking on more debt and taking on debt that, if interest rates rise at all, as they have, becomes unaffordable, that people and companies and governments do not have the revenue to support the debt service payments as interest rates rise. And then the third force that he sees as being a major driver is the wealth gap between the rich and the poor. He sees that as being very high by historical standards now, and that will be something that will drive a rise in populism. Also seeing the debt issue affecting how we deal with climate, and that because of the very high debt, we just won't be able to afford to do some of the things relating to climate that we want to be doing. He sees technology as a major driver of growth, but there'll be fights ahead, he sees, in over data ownership. Looking ahead at growth, he sees that being low for at least 10 years. He's very pessimistic. And let me move on and cover the next example that we wanted to, Peter Zeihan. Zeihan is a geopolitical strategist. He's worked for a number of think tanks over the years and now is on his own. He's very prominent with publishing books and also with making a lot of videos on YouTube if you're interested in him after this. His biggest focus, as with the fourth turning, is on demography. He sees that a combination of that and a geopolitical movement away from globalization will be the two main drivers of our future. Relating to China, he predicts that within 10 years, we will have to have moved away from depending on China for a lot of the manufacturing that we've come to depend upon them for over the last 30 years. And he suggests that China has been subsidizing world consumption for those 30 years. There will be a big bump up in prices, inflation caused by switching away from China, because nobody else that will do that will want to subsidize it to the extent that China has. As the current generation of folks, the baby boomers who are entering retirement or will finish entering retirement over the next 5 to 10 years, as they draw down on their savings, there's going to be a shortage of capital for investment. The next generation coming up into the age when they generate lots of savings is much smaller, so that there won't be a replacement of the capital that's being spent down. But at the same time, consumption is going to go down because the youngest generations with the family formation and then the households starting new households is also much smaller. We haven't lived through a period like that where the population is shrinking, where there's a small group of young folks starting families and homes relative to the size of the entire population. So that's totally new territory, as Zeihan says. He sees negative or low growth resulting from this over a 10 to 15 year period. But he sees that once the millennial generation, the next large generation, gets into their savings years, which he defines as starting at around age 50, things will turn around and there'll be a boom 10 to 15 years in the future when that happens.
Let's go on to the IPCC scenario then. Dave asked me to explain what that is, and I always have to look it up. It's the International Panel on Climate Change. It's sponsored by the UN, and what they do is they work on the climate side of scenarios, and then they take those climate scenarios and convert them into financial scenarios. And so they're very far-reaching. They go into that narrative mode where they might map their scenarios into about 7 or 8 different narrative scenarios that might talk about probability of a recession in one, and high oil use in another, and then in some of the more positive ones you see high investment in carbon capture or other technology and things like that. So it's an interesting set of scenarios. It was the introduction for me to narrative scenarios. Is the first time I had seen it. From a demographic shifts standpoint, the IPCC looks at the older generation seeing little benefit in mitigation. They're not going to be around that long. So it becomes more of a, what is the younger generation trying to do about it? In terms of levels of debt, it diverts spending away from other things like safety nets and education and health and all that. So it becomes much tougher to bring in growth expenditures from a government standpoint. From a climate effect, this is what these scenarios were built for. They look at temperatures, sea level rise, and really focus in on the need for infrastructure repair and for planning for future environmental changes. From rise of populism, here they look primarily at inequality and the older populations delaying action. So you can see too, there's some overlap between a lot of these that, each of the six is not different for each of the set of scenarios that we're looking at. From a growth standpoint, looking at lower growth because money that could be spent on growing infrastructure and education and things like that will instead be spent on adaptation, making sure that we're not all just flooded out by sea level rise, for example. And then technology, within the IPCC, there's a belief that technology solutions will save the day. There's a lot of carbon capture built into these scenarios. It might be a little bit optimistic, I think, in my opinion. Are you challenged to meet your need for actuaries? Actuarial risk management can help. ARM's Data and Modeling Institute, or DMI, is a team of talented actuaries in Argentina with training and experience, working with an extensive bench of senior consultants. They will partner with you to outsource all or part of your actuarial and modeling needs to the DMI. The best thing? We do this at a significant cost saving to you while still positioning your company for tomorrow's challenges. Contact ARM today about our DMI modeling and valuation services. One of the other things that you can do is to create your own scenarios. We look at, most of the people who are modeling, they're modeling a specific set of liabilities, specific set of assets. You're going to know what risks drive those assets into tail situations. And so you can create your own, looking at either, regulatory standard of practice, looking at different professions. There's a lot of different professions that have put out scenarios for you to consider, and some of them might be internally generated. If you have a unique mix of business it might make sense to do something a little different than what some of the other groups are doing. So, you want to look at scenario, general scenario planning, but especially stress testing, looking for what matters, what impacts your bottom line based on the products that you have on your books. You can build off those regulatory requirements. I know I developed in a research paper a few years ago a way to look at a wide variety of interest rate scenarios that normally would take thousands of scenarios to run, and was able to do it essentially with six, and get a lot of the story of those scenarios that would take a lot less time. So I think a lot of smaller companies, that is something they're really looking to do, is do something that can be a lot quicker. And you want to go beyond the financial results and look at what else is being driven by these scenarios. We go back to the IPCC, where those narrative scenarios get into education spending and health spending and infrastructure spending and things like that. And that makes a difference. Another thing that I like to look at is having a base scenario, and then have one that's positive and one that's negative. One of the things is you'll be surprised by is how often there are unintended consequences. You have something that you think is a negative scenario, but some variables maybe don't interact the way you expected them to, and it ends up being opposite of what you thought in terms of a end result. Those results at the end are somewhat surprising sometimes. So then other things you can do is borrowing scenarios. One set that I've used in the past in some papers is free, which is always our favorite cost, and it's provided by the Pardee Center at the University of Denver. Very in-depth set of scenarios, not too bad in terms of being able to use them and being able to use them without having to spend a huge amount of time. And what they're doing is they're collecting what other people have done. The sets of projections that they collect are often going out to 2100. Now they do focus on GDP, but they get you that interactions, and it's often done by country, very detailed. An example that I've used in the past and is a really good way to think about these was put together by Hillebrand Clausen in 2015. What they did was they looked at a 2x2x2 grid. So they looked at economic growth, either low or high, energy prices, either low or high, and then geopolitical relationships, so political harmony, and whether that's low or high. And so you get each of the 2x2x2, so eight different combinations of those. And in the paper that I was involved with, we ended up picking one that we thought would be stressful. And so we picked low economic growth, medium high energy prices, and low geopolitical relationships, so low political harmony. And it ended up that was kind of the scenario that we were moving into in that 2018 time period. And that one was called regional mercantilism within the Hillebrand Clausen set. And what they did was they took those eight and then put probabilities on them for you to look at. So you'd be able to adjust those probabilities if you wanted to, if they didn't match up with what your thoughts were. So that was kind of interesting. Dave, I mentioned complex adaptive systems. You want to talk about somewhat about the interactions within those?
Yeah, we've talked about three or four or five different factors or drivers of these scenarios that we'd look at, and we talk about them independently, but in fact, in the real world, they're interdependent, that people react to one of the kind of stresses or changes that we're talking about, and that reaction causes another aspect of the scenario to be different. So we have to pay attention to cause and effect, and then to secondary effects of the changes. We have to realize that correlation is one of the trickiest concepts in our bag of tricks, because historical correlations don't necessarily stay constant, that there are differences in correlations that come about over time. And we have to also be able to figure out how to filter the difference between coincidences and correlations, because in some cases we have seen things happen together which were being driven by totally different forces, and so or therefore that goes with the old saying that there's a a correlation but no cause and effect relationship. And one of the terms that I like to keep in mind is the idea of cascading failures, that a lot of the things that we're talking about that are driving this regime change is our main subject are negative things. The debt, the climate, the demography changes, they're all things that we think are going to hurt our civilization. And so we have to be really careful about at what point does the cumulative effect of all these things cause a cascading failure, cause there to be other things that just get much, much worse. And that's some of the things that in the scenarios we talked about today, you heard about. Let me try and wrap up. I still want to emphasize the four main drivers that we talked about in the last webinar. That's debt, climate, demography, and technology. And just point out that one of them, debt, is something that's a repeat. If you go in and you read the material that we mentioned about that Dalio does, he talks a lot about studying historical debt cycles. So that's something that we've had experience with before. All different civilizations, all different countries over the past have gone through these debt cycles. We know how debt cycles go in general. But the other three things, climate, demography, and technology, we're entering new phases. We're entering a phase of experiences that humankind has not seen before. We're going to need a new paradigm to live with those things, that the combination of between the climate, demography, and the technology is going to be something that just doesn't fit into the way we've been thinking about how we run our society, how we run our businesses, how we run our economies. So that's the challenge that we've been trying to point out with this series. The other thing that was pointed out by more than one of the folks that we reviewed today is the effect of inequality, economic inequality, on these scenarios in the future. And that's also something I'll point out that we should pay attention to. This is going to be a four-part series. This is part two. And in the third part, I want to look forward to us diving into scenario planning. Max alluded to this a lot, and we've been building up to it. And we think that the scenario planning is a major way of responding and preparing for this regime change. So we're going to talk to you in the next podcast in this series about scenario planning, how to construct scenarios for scenario planning, and then how to do the planning part of scenario planning, working with multiple scenarios, coming up with multiple plans, and then what do you do with those plans. With that, I'll finish up. If you like this, please hit the like button and subscribe to these podcasts, and you'll be able to see more and more of this. Thank you.